From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. In the first half hour today, a conversation with Asif Manvi, correspondent for Comedy Central's award-winning fake news program, The Daily Show. Manvi is speaking in Iowa City this evening. Then in the second half hour, U.S. Congressman Bruce Braley of Iowa's 1st District is my guest. We'll ask him about the massive egg recall and the congressional investigation that's been launched. Also, the mosque controversy in New York City and how the recently signed U.S. Manufacturing Enhancement Act may benefit Iowa. First, a look at this hour's news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Asif Manviwala was born in Mumbai, India. His family immigrated to England when he was about a year old, and he began acting there at a young age. Since 2007, Asif Manviwala has been known to Comedy Central viewers as Asif Manvi, the senior Middle East correspondent for Comedy Central's The Daily Show. The satirical fake news show has won 13 Emmys and 2 Peabody Awards. Tonight, Asif Manvi will be speaking in Iowa City at the Englert Theater as part of the University of Iowa Lecture Series. It starts at 7:30 and is open to the public. Here's Jon Stewart interviewing Asif Manvi on The Daily Show in January of 2009. This is shortly after then-Senator Obama was the surprise winner of the Iowa caucuses.
In your estimation, will Barack Obama's name affect his chances in 2008?
Well, John, everyone agrees this guy is young, handsome, and charismatic. But you cannot deny his last name is one tiny consonant from being the first name of one of our sworn enemies. In this age of terror, can we really afford to take that chance? John?
It's a happenstance of language. It's what they're doing is they're linking him with a loaded image. It's unfair to do such a thing.
Well, of course, it's patently unfair. Unfortunately, Obama's been laden with a name that causes Al-Qaeda problems.
Now, right there. See, right, you said been laden and then Al-Qaeda. That is.
No, I said Al-Qaeda. Hussein Al-Qaeda.
No, sir, Hussein. See, that's... If you're judging candidates solely by their names, why not just elect Johnny Apple Pieman?
Be serious, John. The country's not ready for a Jewish president.
Daily Show correspondent Asif Manvi from 2009 in conversation with Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. Asif Manvi joins us now by phone. He's on the way to the airport to fly to Iowa. Asif, welcome to The Exchange. What are your plans for the presentation this evening in Iowa City?
This is me just as myself, you know, as Asif Manvi. I'm just going to be talking about a little bit about The Daily Show and, you know, life of The Daily Show, how things work there. You know, I'll be showing some clips, talking about a few pieces that I did, giving you some behind-the-scenes sort of stories about some of the scenes and some of the pieces that we've shot over the years, that I've shot.
Mm-hmm. Now, the title of your talk is The Real Story Behind the Fake News. It leads me to think that we might be surprised to know how fake news is made. Will we?
Well, you might be. You might be, unless you're in fake news. You know, it's a skill. It's a skill set all to itself.
So what might we not know? What are people surprised to find out about fake news?
How real it is sometimes, and how dangerous it is. I think
dangerous.
Yeah, you'll find out how dangerous it can be to be a Daily Show correspondent.
Has your life ever been in danger?
My life has never been in danger, but the basic shape of my face has occasionally.
You have to explain that, please.
You know, I almost got punched in the mouth a couple of times, I think. So uh-huh. Yeah, we'll be talking about that a little bit.
Does The Daily Show get much hate mail?
You know, I don't know. It doesn't come to me, so. I would suggest that if you are going to send hate mail, just send it care of Mr. John Stewart.
Right. You said you are coming as Asif Manvi, so that means you are in character or you not in character. I'm trying to determine which Asif Manvi I'm talking to.
There's an Asif Manvi who is an actor, writer, comedian, and then there's an Asif Manvi who is a Daily Show correspondent.
During the last presidential campaign, you said that Senator Obama should not be elected because there was only one letter difference between Obama and and Osama.
Right, that's true.
And now, according to the latest Pew Research poll, more Americans than ever, one in five believe incorrectly that the president is a Muslim. Now, do you in any way feel partially responsible for that?
You know what? I think the education system in this country is responsible for that because it proves that Americans can't spell. Do I take partial responsibility for that? I don't think that, you know, look, all my family are Muslims, and I actually, I think they're lovely people. So if you did turn out to be a Muslim, I don't think it would be all that bad.
Mm-hmm. Right. What are you making of the controversy over the mosque, the planned mosque in New York?
I think it is much ado about nothing, honestly. I think the irony of the situation is that there's already a mosque there in the vicinity. So this idea that somehow these strangers are moving in or they're building something, there's already been a mosque there for many, many, many years. So it's a bit crazy to me. But if you watch The Daily Show tonight, I actually have a piece on that is about the controversy over the mosque in Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. And what slant does that take?
Well, you'll have to watch and see tonight. It's, we take the usual Fox News stance.
Now, I want to play a little clip of you being interviewed by John Stewart on The Daily Show. This is right after Judge Sotomayor became a Supreme Court justice. And,
right.
And talk a little bit about ethnic stereotypes.
A great deal now from the pundits about how Sotomayor is Latina and a woman. Mm-hmm. Now it's time to talk about, I think, the decisions that she's been involved in.
Well, absolutely, John. It's been a fascinating legal career. And over her 17 years as a judge, one thing is clear. She like to judge in America. She hold no grudge in America.
Yes, that's very nice, Asif. West Side Story, very nice. That's
She likes to eat fudge in America.
Yeah, okay. That's nice. Fudge.
La 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 in America.
Asif.
Yeah.
I don't think ludge is a word.
It's Latina.
The concern here is being expressed by her opposition is that she would allow her Latina heritage to sway her decisions. Mm-hmm. Yet it seems like she's rejected discrimination claims from what I read 80% of the time. So
Yes. Judge Sotomayor, you got some splaining to do.
Yes, okay. Very, very nice. That's Desi Arnaz.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's,
yeah.
He's actually Cuban. So
yeah.
It's a different
Hey gringo. Would you like some enchilada, a quesadilla from Guadalajara?
That's just offensive. That's
Can fake news be at all problematic in that it perpetuates ethnic stereotypes? Even if you, a person with an Indian background in a mainly white Protestant country, is doing the stereotyping, the fun?
First of all, I don't know if America is mainly a white Protestant country. But secondly, I think that, we are sending up, we're a parody. So we're sort of sending up the culture at large. So I think that most people who watch the show recognize, I have a lot of feedback from South Asian Americans and Indian Americans and, Muslim Americans. I get a lot of feedback from those people. And 99% of the time, they get it. Mm-hmm. And they appreciate it. Because I think even when even when we are when I'm up there stereotyping myself or my own people, it is it's A, being done by somebody sort of quote unquote in house, and secondly, there's a recognition of that there's a parody being made of the culture at large. And so I think that's the main difference between what we do as a comedy show and what other news networks do, where it's being perceived as real news, you know, and often it is not. It's just theater. It's as much, you know, unfortunately, it's as much theater as we are.
Can you get away with things a white correspondent cannot?
I can say things that are sometimes edgier, sometimes more, slightly more controversial, because I think that I possess a positioning, as it were, on the show, which is sort of in between cultures. And so because of that, sometimes I feel like I can get away with saying stuff that maybe Jones or Oliver, you know, they could say it, but it wouldn't resonate in the same way.
Mm-hmm. If you've just joined us, my guest is Asif Manvi, the actor. He plays the senior Middle East correspondent for Comedy Central's The Daily Show. Tonight he'll be speaking in Iowa City as part of the University of Iowa Lecture Series starting at 7:30. It's open to the public. The Pew Research Center claims that The Daily Show has become a primary source of news for many young people. Does this worry you or give you a greater sense of responsibility?
Well, I think it doesn't give me a greater sense of responsibility because I just never have had a sense of responsibility my whole life. but I think it does worry me in the sense that you know, I think people should be watching all the news coverage, you know, and making up their mind, not just The Daily Show. But I think it actually is a commentary on our culture more than anything else, that a comedy show has come to this position in the culture where a comedy show actually, by virtue of its position as a comedy show, can actually speak truth to power more effectively than real quote-unquote journalists, mm-hmm. you know?
The Daily Show, I understand, has an average of 2 or 3 million viewers per show. Who do you understand your audience to be?
Mostly degenerates and stoners, I think. You know, no, I think that, you know, I think we have a very smart audience. I think, you know, we have a large percentage of, you know, it is Comedy Central after all, so we have a large percentage of degenerates and stoners, as I said. But we also have a tremendous amount of really smart, educated people who watch the show. And I think, you know, I there's a cross-section of people that come up to me and talk about the show, and, you know, everybody from, like I said, college students to, like, you know, to professors.
Coming up, more of my conversation with Asif Manvi, correspondent for Comedy Central's The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Manvi will be giving a presentation tonight at the Englert Theater in Iowa City. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. Let's get back to my conversation with Asif Manvi, correspondent for The Daily Show on Comedy Central.
What are some of the things you can't do on The Daily Show? You can do an awful lot. We hear some bleeps in terms of language, but where are the no-go areas?
You know, sometimes things are too raw. Sometimes things need a little bit of time, you know. I think that we try not to ever operate from a place of what we can't do. You know, sometimes things are just in bad taste. Because of timing, you know, I think a perfect example was what happened after 9/11, you know, and John's response to that. You know, there's some things that we just have to be conscious, I think, of the temperature of the culture at large, and, you know, and, but I think that, you know, we push the envelope a lot and often say things that are unpopular even to our, as it were, base audience, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's usually just you take it on a case by case basis, and usually I think where we don't go is if it's just in bad taste or the timing is bad, you know.
One no go area recently has been resurfacing. It has been around for years. You can't depict Muhammad.
Right.
And that's true of a lot of South Park, for instance, had a problem right. with that as well. So this gets talked about.
Well, it got talked about, but in a you know, we were very religiously sensitive about that. You know, John and I actually had a conversation about the best way to approach that, so that not to say what the show wanted to say and what John wanted to say, and at the same time not to be insensitive to the genuine feeling of a lot of Muslim Americans who would be uncomfortable with the portrayal of Muhammad. So I think that was a situation where I feel like we recognized that we needed to say something, and at the same time, it was how do we say this and not get our point undermined by something, something else that was probably not relevant or not what we meant to do.
The fake interviews you do, Asif Manvi, mm-hmm. And along with the other correspondents at The Daily Show are incredible. I want to share a short clip of a recent one you did with a woman from California. You interviewed her. She is against an elementary school program that teaches Chinese mm-hmm. language and culture in a California community because she mm-hmm. was afraid it would spread communism. And here's a short mm-hmm. clip from that.
If it comes from communist China, it is tainted with communism. You can't lie to us.
Yes, everything from China is tainted with communism. And, of course, lead. Fortunately, people like Teresa Macias are taking a stand.
We should not be teaching our children, our young children, about Mandarin language and Chinese culture.
Right. Why should we as Americans be learning what our enemy is saying?
We as adults should absolutely learn about our enemy. But when we're bringing young children into a program like that, that's you're just asking for trouble. That's brainwashing.
Right. It's simple. In the same way that anyone learning German becomes a Nazi, or anyone learning French becomes an ass, learning Chinese has only one outcome.
My question, Asif, are these people in on the joke generally when you do these fake interviews? Are they playing along, or are they really representing that opinion genuinely?
Well, you know, I talk about this in the show tonight, so I don't want to give away too much of what I talk about. But they are genuinely being interviewed. You know, there's definitely something that happens to people when you stick a camera in their face and you give them airtime on television to speak their opinions, and people will say the most outrageous things. So yeah, I have to say, I mean, the stuff that we generally, you know, we never feed people lines. So, you know, they say what they say.
After the fact, when a fake interview or an interview like that has been aired, do people ever get upset about the way they've been portrayed?
I'm sure they do. Again, I don't hear it. I mean, the couple of occasions, I mean, that woman, for example, that you just we just had the clip of, actually wrote us a letter thanking us for being on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that sometimes people that we might even skewer a little bit on the show end up, you know, thanking us for being on the show. So it just goes to show you that no press is bad press, I guess.
And their moment in the spotlight outweighs any potential embarrassment.
Yeah, I think it's kind of sad sometimes, but I think that might be true in a lot of people's minds.
There was a lot of press, and I'm sure you remember this. You joined the Daily Show crew in 2007, is that right?
Well, yeah, technically 2007, but I was actually on the show in 2006.
Okay. Before President Obama took office, there were some worries in the waning days of the Bush 2 administration that once George W. Bush left office, this new president would offer nothing very good to make fun of. How do you think it's mm-hmm. turned out?
You know, I think there's always, I mean, I was asked that question a lot during the election. And, you know, the fact is that there's always going to be something to make fun of, because what we make fun of is the system. And, you know, the system is inherently hilarious, you know? And so I don't think it doesn't matter who's in office. I think there's always going to be stuff to make fun of. I don't think that we ever worried about that.
You are an actor of many years, Asif Manvi. How did you become a Daily Show correspondent? An audition?
I really just auditioned for it. Yeah, they were looking for a Middle East correspondent, and I just went down there and auditioned, and John hired me.
You were born in Mumbai, India, moved very early on in your life. Your family immigrated to England, and then you came to this country when?
In 82.
In 82. Have you encountered any prejudice in this country from people in the sense that, not necessarily a menacing sense, but that they get your ethnicity wrong?
Yeah. I mean, I had an occasion once in a Dunkin' Donuts in North Carolina where a guy sat across from me and just couldn't figure out where I was from. Kept asking me. He literally went through every ethnicity under the sun except Indian. And he even asked me if I was black. He asked me if I was. And I remember just looking at him and just, you know, being amazed that, and he just, at the end of it, he just shook his head and he had just no idea where I could possibly be from. That I think is a perfect example of stuff that I experienced when I first got here, I guess.
Now, you said you won't be doing any reporting while you're in Iowa.
Not unless something really, really exciting happens.
Well, you know, we do. We're home to about a half billion bad eggs these days.
Well, I'll see what I can do. I don't have a film crew with me. All I have is a notebook and some clips.
Well, maybe I can. Can I sell you on the Iowa State Fair where you can eat all kinds of food on a stick?
Well, I'll certainly go down there and eat food on a stick, but I'm not gonna lug a film crew around because they eat a lot, and then I gotta pay for it.
You know, Karl Rove was invited by the University of Iowa Lecture Committee a few years ago to Iowa City. Do you know how that turned out?
No, I don't. I how did it turn out?
Well, he was received with a great deal of protest.
Oh, wow.
With some of the views that you portray on The Daily Show, and they're quite strident views that might not necessarily agree with a liberal community like Iowa City University Committee. Do you anticipate a similar amount of discord as Karl Rove's visit?
I hope so. That would be awesome if I could get protests like Karl Rove. Come out and protest me.
Asif Manvi, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. It's been a real pleasure, and we'll look forward to greeting you here in Iowa a little bit later today.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Asif Manvi, correspondent for Comedy Central's The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Manvi will give a presentation this evening at 7:30 at the Englert Theater in Iowa City. It's titled, The Real Story Behind the Fake News. Coming up, we'll be joined by U.S. Congressman Bruce Braley of Iowa's 1st District. We'll ask him about the massive egg recall and the congressional investigation that's been launched into it. Also, the mosque controversy in New York City and how the recently signed U.S. Manufacturing Enhancement Act may benefit Iowa. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with The Exchange over the noon hour here on Iowa Public Radio's news stream. I'm Ben Kiefer. And we at The Exchange like to make sure we check in regularly with Iowa's elected representatives in Washington. Joining us now, live by phone, Congressman Bruce Braley of Iowa's 1st District. Good afternoon to you, Congressman. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me back on the show.
I want to make sure our listeners are aware they can call in. Call in with your comments or questions for Congressman Braley in the next half hour, 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Call right now, or you can email TheExchange@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter at IPR
talk. We heard that in the news, Congressman Braley, the egg recall in the news. Yesterday, the House Energy and Commerce Committee, I understand, launched an investigation into the egg recall, specifically sending letters to the owners of the two Iowa farms, Wright County Egg and Hillendale Farms, which combined have recalled more than 500 million eggs. Why did Congress launch this investigation?
Well, some of our listeners probably are aware that I'm vice chair of the Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee, which is the subcommittee that's actually requesting the information, Ben. Food safety is a huge priority of our committee and our subcommittee, and it's something we've been focused on ever since I joined the subcommittee at the beginning of the 111th Congress. Everyone probably remembers the huge peanut recall that was associated with Peanut Corporation of America, where we had extensive hearings. So part of our responsibility is to make sure that our nation's food supply is safe and that consumers are not harmed by the food products that are being sold. So this is a very challenging issue, obviously, for Iowa's egg producers, and yet it's also very challenging for those individuals who are affected by eggs that are contaminated with salmonella. So we're taking this very seriously. We want to get the facts. We want to understand how this happened, why it happened, and what steps can be taken to prevent an outbreak like this from occurring again. And I look forward to working with the other members of the subcommittee as we go about our business.
The primary responsibility for regulating egg production is with the Food and Drug Administration. But until last month, the FDA didn't have any regulations in place for evaluating egg operations. Why is this? Is this true?
Well, one of the reasons is that there are many different federal agencies that have different responsibilities for monitoring the safety of our food supply. You've got the U.S. Department of Agriculture, you've got the FDA, and you've got other agencies that have some relationship to the safety of our food supply. Then you have state agencies who are also involved in inspections of these facilities. So sometimes the biggest challenge we face is making sure that there's not duplication of effort or effort where the proper oversight is not taking place. And so one of the things we're trying to do is make sure that we have a system in place that protects America's food consumers and provides assurances that necessary safety precautions are being carried out before those products enter the market.
Can you see at this point, before the investigation has completed its work, that change is needed?
Well, one of the things we've learned is that there's a big danger in judging the facts before the facts are all in. And obviously, with a recall of this size, we want to get the full facts from not only the companies that are involved in the recall, but any of the agencies who've been involved in doing on-site inspections in the past, making sure that there were the proper safeguards being followed, and if there weren't, trying to get an understanding of what changes need to be made to ensure that the public is being protected. And that's what we'll do. We'll get the information. There may be hearings scheduled on this where individuals are asked to come out and testify about what went on, and then we'll have a much better understanding of what needs to be done to protect consumers moving forward.
If you've just joined us, Congressman Bruce Braley joining us live by phone of Iowa's 1st District. Your thoughts, exchange listeners, and questions about the egg recall and the congressional investigation launched into that. 1-866-780-9100. Also, other political matters that you'd like to bring up with Congressman Braley are welcome as well. 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Should the state of Iowa have done more to regulate these two egg producers?
Well, again, I am not in a position to judge what the state did in order to render an opinion on what they should have done more. Part of what we're going to do is look into what role state agencies may have played in protecting the food supply and what role federal agencies played or failed to play, and then come up with recommendations on how we can improve food safety, which is the number one concern of everyone. So I'm not going to get into a guessing game on what state agencies should or shouldn't have done until we know the facts.
When the egg the eggs were recalled, the first recall was announced, you sent out a news release saying Quote, Wright County Egg is conducting a voluntary recall because they understand the gravity of this issue, and I applaud them for taking the appropriate steps to correct any problems that might have occurred in their facilities. It turns out that the DeCoster family, which owns Wright County Egg in Galt, has a history of legal problems. They were cited for numerous environmental problems in the 1990s. They ran into trouble with the U.S. Department of Labor for worker safety concerns. Given that there were so many problems, Congressman, prior to the egg recall, how can you say that you were taking the appropriate steps to correct any problems that might have occurred in their facilities?
Well, there's a big difference between past misbehavior, which they are properly condemned for, how they respond in a direct problem of this magnitude that affects so many from food safety. My comments were not at all in any way intended to be an endorsement of their past labor practices, their environmental practices, or their history of food safety. I was simply commenting upon the prompt recall of literally millions of eggs on a very short time frame, which is something we want to encourage every food producer to do when problems surface that often are very difficult to trace, because what happens is these products, these food products, Ben, go out into the marketplace all over the country. A problem comes up, and one of the biggest challenges we've identified from our past food safety hearings is how you determine the source of that contamination and get it off the shelves and removed from other consumers before it's consumed and they are injured or, in the worst case scenario, killed by these foodborne illnesses. So my comment at the time of the recall was solely related to their response to the need to get those products off the shelf. They've got a very troubling history in terms of the way they've operated their employment practices, their environmental practices, and are to be properly condemned for things they've done in the past that were not according to the law. But I'm trying to focus on the very immediate problem of protecting consumers, and that's why I issued the comment I did about getting those eggs off the shelf. The other thing I can tell you is, having been at the state fair last week and seeing the Iowa Egg Council there, I know that every egg producer in Iowa who is doing things the right way and selling their products is harmed when people in the public all over the country have the perception that Iowa eggs are unsafe. I went through this when people were calling the H1N1 virus the swine flu, and it had an enormous impact on pork products that were being sold in the state of Iowa, even though the flu virus itself was not technically a swine flu. So we know that when there's a public health concern, it has enormous economic impact, even on people who are producing safe food products, and that's why it's so important for producers involved in these contaminations to get those products off the shelf as quickly as possible.
Congressman Bruce Braley of Iowa's 1st District with us until the end of the hour. Warren is joining us from near Dubuque. Good afternoon, Warren. Thank you for joining our program.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Go ahead, please.
All right. Well, before I started your conversation, you had a quote from Senator Chuck Grassley where he talked that agricultural, the ag scale had gotten too large and too big company-ish. I was going to ask the representative if there is any legislation in the works that would promote smaller scale chicken egg producing, and I can take my answer off the air.
Okay, Warren, thank you. That was in our news roundup at the bottom of the hour. Dennis Reese had that news. The comment by Senator Grassley saying too much concentration in big ag companies. Is this one of the messages you get from this recall as well?
Oh, yeah. I want to thank Warren for that very good question. I was just able to hear the very end of Senator Grassley's comment, and I do agree with him that there's too much concentration and too much vertical integration in the food supply chain. And that's why I have supported legislation in the past that increases the control of producers and decreases the control of large commercial packers to control our food supply, and that includes large conglomerations that control large segments of the egg market as well. One of the things we know is that competition is best for the American consumers, and when we have too few people in the marketplace, that's when we tend to see abuses in environmental and in safety and in food safety issues. So I think that there needs to be more done to encourage a lot more competition in the marketplace, and that's the type of legislation that I'm going to continue to push for as it relates to our agricultural economy here in Iowa.
Your comments and questions for Congressman Bruce Braley, live by phone on The Exchange, 1-866-780-9100. Email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. From Okoboji, John is joining us. Good afternoon, John.
Hey, gentlemen. Congressman, I just, there's a lot of talk right now, especially about the recall and of course, Grassley making his comments about paring down the big corporations. Yet, it's an election cycle, and it seems that a lot of these people, you know, now that Iowa's own Tom Vilsack as Secretary of Agriculture, I wonder where he'll go after he's done serving in this administration. So many of these people end up back in these corporations that produce much of the problem that we're seeing, especially with this current ag recall. If it's not the recall of eggs, it's the swine flu, like you mentioned. What does the public need to know about their own leadership, their own elected representatives, and where they were before or where they end up after their public service? And I guess what I'm getting at is if the leadership continues to perpetuate consumerism and market value of products, won't we continue to have the same problems over and over? It's one thing during an election year to say we need to pare down large corporations and get back to small-time farming, which we always hear every election cycle. But what is actually happening within those hallowed halls in terms of actually getting those things done day-to-day instead of just when it sounds good when you're trying to get reelected?
Thank you, John, from Okoboji.
Well, thanks for the question, John. I certainly am not in a position to speak for Secretary Vilsack and what his future intentions are. But look, since I was elected to Congress, we have pushed for stricter ethical restrictions on when people who leave either an elected or an appointed federal office can go into work advocating for the types of policies that are directly related to agencies they used to regulate as the administrator or write laws for as a member of Congress. And I think those cooling off periods are appropriate. I think that the American public should be appropriately concerned about having too much of a revolving door policy where people move in and out of private business from government agencies or from elected positions and have an ability to shape policy from outside that they previously were working on while they were serving in Congress or in a federal agency. But these are the types of things that are, you know, legitimate questions to ask candidates when they're running for office, and they're also legitimate to point out when we see abuses that occur from people who game the system. We've been working hard to try to tighten those ethical restrictions so that that revolving door does not spin the way that it has in the past, but it's ultimately up to voters to hold people accountable. That's the beauty of our Constitution, is that people like me run for election every 2 years, and the voters have to decide whether we're living up to those commitments. That's the way that it's always been. We certainly don't live in the same environment that I grew up in as a child of rural America, rural Iowa in the 1960s, where there was a family farm on every section. And because of that, the whole nature of agriculture has changed dramatically in my lifetime in Iowa, and there is a much bigger corporate influence than there used to be. We have to decide how we're going to move forward as a state in the future. That involves the combination of what we're setting at a federal level for agricultural policy, what we're setting at the state level, and what type of incentives we give to young agricultural entrepreneurs and farmers who are going to be providing the food of the future.
Let's shift gears with Congressman Bruce Braley in the final minutes to move from agriculture to manufacturing. Yesterday, you were in Clinton, Iowa, as part of a manufacturing tour. And earlier this month, President Obama signed the U.S. Manufacturing Enhancement Act. Talk about your tour and how this act specifically will benefit Iowa.
Well, Ben, I have long been an advocate of strengthening America's manufacturing industry, because Iowa and America have always been known as places where we build things. And agriculture and manufacturing have been the twin pillars of our economy in this state as long as I've been alive. I toured the ADM plant in Clinton where they're making biodegradable plastic, and they're making it here in the state of Iowa from raw materials that we grow in our fields. I also toured the Davenport work of John Deere, where they're making construction and forestry equipment that's used all over the country, and learned from them about what the stimulus bill that we passed last summer has meant to jobs for their workers in the construction manufacturing segment. We also toured Sevier Steel in Bettendorf a week ago, which is adding employment and demonstrating how we can be competitive with global companies, including those in China, which has been undercutting the steel market by highly trained workers who are working hard and creating a competitive product. So we've been pushing this American Jobs First platform through our populist caucus that I founded, and we were extremely excited when we passed the National Manufacturing Strategy Act. It's going to establish a manufacturing strategy board within the Commerce Department, and that's going to combine federal, state, and local and private leaders in the manufacturing industry to conduct a comprehensive analysis and cover everything from trade issues to financing to our defense industrial base. We also passed the End the Trade Deficit Act, and that is waiting action in the Senate, just like the National Manufacturing Strategy Act. These bills are going to give us a much more level playing field so that manufacturing can continue to be a huge part of our national defense and our economy and put people to work here in the United States.
Congressman Braley, about 5 minutes left of our conversation, a couple other items I wanted to get to. A few weeks ago, the U.S. Department of Education rejected Iowa's bid to get millions of dollars in Race to the Top funding to improve K through 12 education. That was the first round of those awards. Now, the second round announced today, nine states in the District of Columbia will share the $3.4 billion from Race to Top school reform competition. Iowa not in those numbers again this time. Why do you think Iowa has been left out?
Well, it's a very competitive process, and one of the things that the Department of Education was looking at is the level of commitment by each state, the type of innovation they were willing to commit to as part of their Race to the Top funding. And I have not had an opportunity to speak to Secretary Duncan or anyone at the department as to why Iowa has not been selected. All I know is that the Secretary has visited the state of Iowa. He came here to the University of Northern Iowa and spoke about the administration's commitment to comprehensive education reform. He knows that Iowa has been a longstanding leader in education. He knows that we have been a longstanding leader in educational research. So I will certainly be talking to people in the Department of Education, trying to get a sense of why the selection criteria has not resulted in Iowa being selected. But the most important thing is that no matter whether Iowa is selected for Race to the Top funding or not, we need to continue to be on the cutting edge of educational reform and producing the smartest and sharpest students who are going to come out and compete for jobs in a very competitive global economy. So the challenge for us is to create the right environment to make sure that educators are receiving proper compensation for the challenges they face in the classroom, and to give kids the learning environment to be successful. Not everyone is going to win in a competitive grant process, and we want to make sure that Iowans are getting their appropriate share of federal funding, no matter what that source is.
A couple minutes before we end this hour with Congressman Bruce Braley. Late last month, Congressman, in Delaware County, in your first district, the Lake Delhi Dam failed. The area flooded. The priority to help flooded homeowners. But what to do next is also a question. Soon afterwards, you and Governor Culver pledged public support to rebuild the area, but a private homeowner association owns the dam, collects fees from area residents for its upkeep. So why should taxpayers be held responsible for this?
Well, it's most important to talk about the total devastation, not just what happened at Lake Delhi, because I represent counties seven counties that were devastated by the most recent round of flooding: Black Hawk, Buchanan, Butler, Clayton, Delaware, where Lake Delhi is located, Dubuque, Fayette, Jackson, and Jones were all part of the federal disaster declaration. And I haven't been focused exclusively on Lake Delhi. I've been focused on trying to get appropriate federal disaster assistance for those eligible counties whenever anyone falls under the criteria for either public or private assistance or federal disaster mitigation assistance. And I made it very clear from the beginning that my role as a member of Congress was to identify all potential sources of federal disaster funding, no matter where they are, and make sure that they were available to people who were eligible. Now, some of those decisions, Ben...
Less than a minute left, just to warn you.
Yeah, well, some of those decisions get made by community development block grant funding that goes directly to the state, and then the state works with local communities to decide what the most appropriate use for those funds is. And there were a lot of public uses at Lake Delhi. It was available to public to come in and use the lake. There was a public road that went over the dam. So those are gray area issues, and it's going to be up to the local community, the state of Iowa, and the governor's disaster commission to determine what the best use of those federal funds is. That's what my responsibility is, not to make those final decisions, but to make sure that all available disaster assistance is brought into my district and responding to the needs of everyone I represent.
Congressman Bruce Braley, we've run out of time. I want to thank you very much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you, Ben.
The Exchange is produced by Alex Hoyer and Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows, Jeff Schmidt. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. Contact us anytime, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.